Hello, everyone, and welcome to the pre-presentation podcast for Science on Practice in Medicine. Today, I have Dr. Kathleen Ricci from Neurology CenterCare. Hello.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you. You're very much welcome. Always a pleasure to hear you speak. And during March, you're going to be speaking about Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get right into it. My first question was, is it really the most common cause for dementia altogether?
Yeah, by far. So, you know, dementia means it's a neurodegenerative problem. Mm-hmm. So your brain cells are dying in ways they're not supposed to. And Alzheimer's accounts for 80% of all types of dementia. There are about 25 different types, but Alzheimer's is by far the most common.
Whatever happened, or was there ever a time in which hypertensive dementia was more common?
Yeah, so I think I would have to imagine that previously it was much more of a problem. But, you know, in the last several decades, there's been a very strong push to manage things like hypertension. And so vascular dementia has definitely become much less common.
So that's a documented fact.
Yeah.
That it's less common. Okay. So that brings me to my next question on it is, when you have somebody with Alzheimer's versus Lewy body or vascular, et cetera, is it clear cut to differentiate, or you think we are at risk of overdiagnosing?
Well, I think that it is clear for the vast majority of cases, and we are starting to have a lot more diagnostic options that we didn't have before. Previously, it was just neuropsychometric testing, and then the clinical diagnosis of, yep, this is mostly memory, it's probably Alzheimer's. But now we have specialized imaging looking at the deposition of amyloid, which is a abnormal protein that deposits in the brain of patients with Alzheimer's dementia. We don't see that in Lewy body dementia or frontotemporal dementia. We can look at phosphorylated tau, again, another abnormal protein that deposits in the brain. And these are very specific.
Okay.
For Alzheimer's dementia, we have a new blood test looking at phosphorylated tau levels. We can do spinal taps looking at ratios of amyloid versus phosphorylated tau. And so with these more specialized tests, we're now getting to a place where we can diagnose things more definitively and easier.
I want to circle back to that in a second, but before, I wanted to ask you, could any of these findings, especially the neurodegeneration and accumulation of abnormal proteins, could that be seen as a post-disease finding in, let's say, hypertensive vascular disease, like when you had neurodegeneration because of apoptosis, et cetera, or not?
Not really. So the pathology that we see in Alzheimer's dementia is different than what the pathology we see in vascular dementia.
And that gets reflected in the imaging?
Yes.
Accordingly. Okay. So you mentioned a lot of tests, but I presume you don't do all of those. If you were to give me a ballpark way in which you say, yes, this is Alzheimer's, what do you use?
So we start with the clinical exam. And typically in clinic, we use the SLUMS. Previously, we had used mini mental status, which is a good test. The problem is it's copyrighted. And so it's expensive. So we
that's
just do SLUMS, which is free. But that's a test that we can do just right there in clinic.
Okay.
If your score is greater than 20, that's okay. If it's less than 20, then we're worried that you have some type of memory problem. And then, of course, you have to do the MRI. You have to rule out some of those vascular things. You have to rule out tumors. You have to rule out brain injury, things like that. So you need to do the brain imaging and then look for reversible causes, like check the thyroid, check your vitamin B12 level, make sure your liver is doing okay. And a lot of that is done just by primary care. So by the time they've come to see me, we've done that and we've realized that there is something wrong. Then usually we'll do one of a couple of things. One option is to do occupational therapy. So occupational therapy can do a cognitive performance test and really get down to, is this more memory trouble than we expect for age? Is this more likely a medication thing? How well are you functioning on a day-to-day level? If it's not really clear that there is memory problems, because sometimes the difference between normal aging and early dementia can be very, very hard to tell apart. So sometimes we do go right to the neuropsychometric testing. But if there's a strong family history, if the history is really good for Alzheimer's dementia, like getting lost on my way home that in the house that I've lived in forever, or if they can't remember their children's names, if every family member is talking about how they ask the same question over and over again because they can't remember, then going to usually the first line would be the blood test, the phosphorylated tau. That became available this past summer. And I think that's because findings on that blood test really accurately reflect what we're going to see on the imaging. So if it's abnormal, very helpful. If it's normal, then that's helpful. It means that it's probably not Alzheimer's dementia. We have to think of another kind. And if it's indeterminate, then we have to go on to either more additional imaging or a spinal tap.
So if I hear you right, looks like the test has a very high negative predictive value, but not a very high positive predictive value. It's very sensitive, but not very specific. Is that correct?
No. So it's very sensitive. Well, it's very specific.
Okay.
So if it's in the abnormal range, the problem is there's this indeterminate range where it's not very specific or sensitive. So it's very specific and sensitive when it's in the normal range or when it's abnormal. But in the indeterminate range, it's not that helpful.
So if it's negative, it's quite likely there's no Alzheimer's, or at least it's very early under the level of detection.
It's probably not Alzheimer's or mild cognitive impairment in early Alzheimer's. Yeah.
Do you, if you were and randomly did in people who are just fine and you have a time machine and you do a blood level 5 years before clinical onset, would it be already positive?
Well, that's something that we don't know. And so one of the limitations of it is looking at people who have normal PET scans, no memory problems, and doing their blood tests now, and then waiting 10 years when they have those changes. Did that change? We don't know because the test is pretty new.
So there might be a role for people with strong family history and then an indication to perhaps screen to tell them at some point this might happen in the future.
So that's certainly possible, but I don't think we know enough yet to justify testing in asymptomatic patients.
Of course, yeah. I'm sure the burden is going to be horrible for people also. So if I hear you right, you have a patient, I'm talking primary care, you suspect something's going on. So unless it's clear cut that this is not just that the person is aging normally, then you move on either to send into occupational or you consider an imaging. And from there is when you refer to neurology, or can primaries do the blood test as well?
I would recommend sending to neurology before you test. I mean, certainly anybody can order the blood test. It's a simple blood test, but then you're responsible for interpreting it.
Dealing with it.
It gets into that indeterminate range or it's positive, you're going to want to have a neurologist on board. So probably just better to send them after you've done the TSH, the B12, and the imaging.
Sure. Now, for the sake of the fun of history gathering, if you have a person who clear-cut has dementia, what makes you think more of Alzheimer versus non-Alzheimer? Is there anything that is more pathognomonic even for it?
Yep. So Alzheimer's, the principal issue with Alzheimer's is short-term memory loss. So that's going to be the biggest thing is what did I do yesterday? What did I do this morning? With strong preservation of past history. So, you know, things you did when you were 20, no trouble remembering. But you can't remember that you talked to your granddaughter yesterday. So it's really going to be the short-term memory as opposed to other things like, say, Lewy body dementia, where it's going to be more visual spatial. So getting confused about where to find the bathroom in your house, getting lost in familiar areas, not recognizing your neighborhood, those kind of things.
Okay. How heavy is family history?
So certainly family history plays a role, particularly if any symptoms occurred really before the age of 65. About a third of people over the age of 85 will have dementia of some type, usually Alzheimer's. And so, you know, the older you get, the less of a role it plays. So I don't get too hung up if somebody says, you know, my mother probably had Alzheimer's dementia and she died when she was 80. I want to know that, but I don't take too much stock in it. But if you have you know, a father who had onset of dementia in his 50s, and now you're 45 coming into your doctor worrying about what is my risk, then we have to talk more about that genetic rule.
Okay. I want to get picky on something you mentioned that I find interesting. So if one out of three people over 85, 90 is going to have Alzheimer's, could we redefine Alzheimer's as normal neurodegeneration with aging, and the problem is when it happens earlier than expected, and that is when it's a disease versus normal checking out?
No, so I think the thought is that still Alzheimer's is abnormal because we see different pathology than just normal age-related brain changes, because you're specifically losing specific populations of cells rather than brain cells as a whole. I mean, as we get older, everything starts dying off in every organ, including the brain. So it is a little different.
Okay. I long forgotten this. Can you please remind me what area of the brain gets affected the most?
Sure. So it's going to be primarily the temporal lobe, so the hippocampus where the memory is, and a very specific area called the nucleus basalis, which those brain cells produce acetylcholine.
Okay. So you have other specific dementias, it affects frontotemporal, et cetera. But for example, in vascular, wherever it lands, it could give you the findings, correct? So that's the specificity of it. All right. Interesting. Now, moving on to management, is it still an irreversible terminal condition? What lies ahead for treatment, prognosis?
Well, that's part of the reason that we wanted to do this podcast, because newer and different treatments are coming out. Now, we still consider this a progressive neurodegenerative problem. It is slowly going to get worse over time. But some of the newer medications are specifically targeting the deposits of amyloid that are in the brain. And so we can slow some of that progression. And I think as time goes on, one of the things we're going to be looking at is, what does that mean 5 years down the road and 10 years down the road? Can we really reverse it or make any significant change? Because if we can stop that amyloid and phosphorylated tau from depositing in the brain, maybe we can change the natural history of the disease. We don't know that yet, but that's one of the exciting parts about the newer treatments that we have.
So what is the natural history versus how has the natural history changed as of now?
Yep.
With treatment.
So, you know, you progressively lose your memory. And so if we use something like a mini mental status exam, you can expect without medication, you're going to lose 3 to 4 points a year on just no medication at all. And so usually, you know, in 5-6 years, you're going to be looking at more of assisted living, or you're going to need a lot of family help and eventually going into the nursing home. Then we had donepezil and memantine come on board. So those are pills that we take, and they have been around a long time. And those will slow the progression of memory loss. When we look at endpoints, they slow the progression from community to nursing home by 4 months, which doesn't sound like a lot, but financially that makes a difference. So that's why the FDA approved it. But on average, you can expect to lose probably 1 point a year with maximal medical treatment.
Okay.
With the newer medications, the decline will be about that or maybe even slower. The problem is with the new medications, we don't have data really longer than 18 months of treatment. So we don't know what that's going to mean at 5 years or 10 years. But it's going to be interesting to see how things are changing.
This is a kind of a healthcare politics kind of question, but would it be fair to say that much of the emphasis in the care for Alzheimer's has to do beyond the patient, him or herself, also with the issue of the cost it has with use of nursing homes, assisted living is a huge burden for the healthcare system. That's why the emphasis on it in part?
Yes, I think that's why these newer medications like Leqembi and Kanuzla, why they're being approved and fast-passed, because one, we don't have better treatment options, and two, because of the cost, as the boomer, the baby boomers are getting older, we're seeing much higher rates of Alzheimer's dementia, and we're going to have to address this because it is going to be a huge financial burden on the healthcare system, on nursing homes, on families.
Okay. I have two more questions in the complete opposites of the spectrum. So the first one, I'm going to go all the way back because I would like to hear about, if you could give me a one-liner. So you deposit this tau protein, and what does it do at the molecular or cellular level that ends up causing the clinical correlation?
That's part of the problem is we don't know. We don't know what it does, but it probably is neurotoxic, but we don't know exactly why it's there or why it's damaging.
So through neurotoxicity, you see cellular apoptosis. Is that what you see when you do a biopsy?
That's what we see, yeah.
So the cells just die off. It's not that they're...
They die off. They don't scar down. There's not a issue with the vasculature there. They just die.
It's not just a functional issue.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, boom, let's jump all over to my last question, which is beyond regular neurology, do you have people who have an emphasis on Alzheimer's? And who is this team, how to refer to these people, and when to refer to you or to this team?
Yep. So here in CentraCare, we don't have any particular person. So there are fellowships on neurocognitive neurology. Mm-hmm. Many people at the University of Minnesota and at Mayo Clinic both have neurocognitive neurologists who specialize just in that. Mm-hmm. In general, referring to general neurology is adequate, and then we can help kind of guide if we need more of those neurocognitive specialists because this isn't typical Alzheimer's dementia, or this is one of those specialized primary progressive aphasias, something like that. We'll get them to the right spot for you.
So you mentioned more complicated Alzheimer. Do you think every Alzheimer patient should see neurology, or can some just be managed by the primary?
I think if it's very clear that it's Alzheimer's, somebody is very impaired, they're coming or complaining of things very late, or there's somebody who don't want treatment, I think having primary care see them, they can start the donepezil, they can use the memantine, that's not a problem. Okay. But if people want more advanced treatment or they want a little more support, then neurology can certainly help.
And this is not an e-consult material, it's in person probably,
right? It is not. It's an in-person thing, yeah.
Not even video probably.
Sometimes video is okay, but I find that people, if they have cognitive troubles, it's a little harder for them to follow what's happening on a video.
Well, I guess, yeah, that was a silly question. Let's make it more complicated by sitting in front of a computer. Well, I'm really looking forward to this during March. I think it's going to be great. And thank you so much for the podcast and for doing the presentation, which will be, again, of great use.
Well, I'm very excited to bring the information forward. And thank you for having me.
Anytime. Thank you.